Going back to what Gerald Celente was saying a minute ago, you know, bombs kill at least 20 people across the Iraqi capital. Bomb blasts in Baghdad killed at least 20 people on Friday at the end of a week of bloodshed that prompted a UN envoy to warn Iraq was at a crossroads. Well, you think? More than 160 people have been killed since Tuesday when troops stormed a Sunni protest camp near Kirkuk. Are you getting this? That part of the world was very, very advanced once upon a time. And look at it now. We can get ahead of this thing, but the operative word is we. We'll take your calls as we go on through the night with our guest for Friday night, Gerald Celente, on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. Could I just give a little shout out here to Susan, who sent an email. You can send me an email to johnb@coasttocoastam.com, J-O-H-N-B as in Bravo, @coasttocoastam.com. And Susan wrote, I'm a liberal and I agree with you. Unprecedented and unnecessary number of police in Boston was an embarrassment and an outrage. Even Bill Maher mentioned it on his HBO show tonight. I'm telling you, liberals and conservatives are beginning to have common ground. Yes, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I want. Enough of this polarization stuff. Okay? Let's save the country first, and then we can argue about the other things. But if we don't save the nation, we got nothing to argue about except, can I'll trade you some of these herbs for some of your blueberries. You say you only got sick once eating them? I'll trade you. It could go there. It's gone that way in other parts of the world more often than you think. Well, you sound like you got a fire in your belly tonight, Gerald, so hit me with some more. What else you got on the scope? Because I got a lot of stuff on my scope. That's a problem.
Well, some of the things, you know, we've been being asked a lot about, of course, is gold prices. And, you know, we've been very accurate in our forecast in gold. We call the bottom of the gold market. It's right at our trendsjournal.com website. You can see it for yourself. We said the gold bull run would begin when gold was at $275 an ounce. And of course, it's, you know, taken a beating lately, and so people are concerned. I bought my first buy of gold in 1978, John B., at $187.50 an ounce. I was there when it collapsed January 20th, 1980, because I also bought it on that day. I was a young guy, didn't know what I was doing. This whole thing was brand new. And I saw it collapse right under me. The emotion now is very different than back then. Back then, in the 1980s, China? What did anybody know about China? Oh, there was this guy Mao before that, but who knew anything about China? China was bad. And then there was Russia. There was no Russia. It was the Soviet Union. And everything east of Berlin was locked down behind it. There was no globalization. India, yeah, people knew maybe about Gandhi. You know, they didn't know much about India. What I'm saying is back in the 1980s, there was no globalization. There was no global trading going on. The markets were so thin that the silver market could be controlled by the Hunt brothers. And it was. This is a very different time. When you saw this unraveling of the gold market, that's done by paper. That's on the COMEX and naked shorts and other trading throughout the world. This isn't about physical supply. And I'm not making that up. You could go to Bloomberg and you can see for yourself, gold traders most bullish in month as buying surges.
Yeah.
And they're talking about the shortage, as you well know, about the gold coins. The U.S. Mint said on April 23rd, it suspended sales of its smallest gold coins after demand more than doubled. And then you look at the central banks. Last year, they bought an estimated 534 tons. Now they're on the way of buying over 550 tons. And then we're getting reports from people that we're hearing about the really heavy holders, individuals that have gold. They're trying to get it out of the bank deposits, depositories, and they have trouble getting it. I truly believe that gold prices will continue to rise. This is a forecast, not investment advice. And the only reason I've been investing in gold since heavily since 2001 was because of the debasement of the currency. I'm not a believer in inflation, and that's why the price of gold is going to go up. Yes, things will cost more, but a different kind of inflation, not a supply and demand inflation. And the supply and demand is there's a shortage of the product and you have to pay more for it. No, this is a debasement of the currency. So, for example, if you live in Zimbabwe or you have a USSA dollar and it's being devalued, that pound of coffee hasn't gone up. It's just going to take you more money to buy it. And so when you're looking at what's going on in the United States with these record low interest rates, when you're looking at what's going on with this so-called quantitative easing, when you look at what's going on over in Europe with their ongoing monetary transactions, or the Bank of Japan announcing that they're going to be printing, or bond buying as they like to call it, $1.4 trillion to boost their economy, to me it's going to be a debasement and a devaluation of the currencies. There's no getting out of this economic downturn. Everything has failed. Everything they have done has failed. Here, go back to Obama when they had that big stimulus program of nearly $1 trillion in 2009. I'll tell you what, John B., by 2010, we're going to have an unemployment rate of 7.2%. Oh, yeah? What happened to that one? It's not working. Pick up the Financial Times, hardly a left-wing newspaper. Read the headline from just a couple of days ago, Wednesday. Pessimism deepens over global economy. You read what's going on in Spain with unemployment. How about going down to Greece? Oh, only 27.2. And those are the official numbers. And then you go over to Portugal, having a lovely time over there too, aren't they? Oh, yes. Italy, yeah, about 12.5%. And they're having trouble forming a government. And then, of course, there's Ireland. And then, of course, Slovenia. Now they're facing also the possibility of a bank crisis. Oh, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary. Oh, everybody forgot about Cyprus. Holiday. I love the word. Orwell could not have made up a better word when they close banks and steal your money. A bank holiday.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at a thing right now that it's on InfoWars. Unprecedented shortages of physical gold and physical silver. Oh, yeah. Shortages of ammo. I mean, all over the place. It's the takedown of paper gold. This is an article by Michael Snyder. The takedown of paper gold and paper silver has unleashed an avalanche of panic buying of physical gold and physical silver all over the planet. In the U.S., is this true? Some dealers are charging premiums of more than 25% over the spot price for gold and silver, and they're getting it. Is that really happening?
You could go to different sites, and they're saying that they're totally closed down. They don't have anything going on. They don't have any product. You know, there's people like Jim Sinclair is really knowledgeable on this field. You know, he's a real old-timer. He really knows the numbers. And Snyder's great in what he writes. And, you know, they're right on target with this. It's not there. And the reason the prices are going up so quickly again, who do you think's buying it? And besides the people in this country. I mean, the Indians love gold.
Oh, yeah.
And India's buying, and China, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So I see gold. You know, there may be, again, this has been in our Trends Journal. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts is one of our contributors. And as you well know, he was the former assistant treasury secretary under Ronald Reagan. So this isn't like a guy, you know, from out of left field. And he wrote a very compelling story of why gold prices are going down, all the naked short selling going on, all the paper selling, and why he believes and why I believe as well that gold is golden for the long run. They're not getting – look, how is this economy going to turn around? What's going to make it? They've lowered interest rates to record lows. I buy some real estate. I'm not a real estate investor or speculator. I'm up here in Colonial Kingston, which is about 2 hours north of New York City. It was the first capital of New York State, and I just bought a 1750s and a 1763 building. And yeah, they're beautiful. It's on the most historic corner in the U.S., the only place on each corner where there are stone buildings that predate the Revolutionary War. I got a loan, a mortgage, for 2.875%. And at those numbers, the real estate market is just pumping along, a little blip up. It should be roaring. They're dumping money into the system at record rates. Nobody's ever seen this kind of cheap money in our lifetimes. This is a grand experiment that has never been pulled off in any... Nobody's ever seen any of this before. And it's not only going on in Japan. It's not only going on in Europe. It's not only going on in the U.S. They're also doing it in China. And what China's doing differently, of course, they're not giving all the money to the banks. They're using the money to build their infrastructure and build their domestic economy. And that, to me, is the only way out of any of this. When was it working before? When was the United States the country that everybody wanted to come to because you had a shot at the brass ring or the gold ring? And I'm saying, well, when did that happen? Well, they put laws in place from the 19th to 20th century to stop the robber barons from robbing everything. Robinson-Patman Act, the Sherman Antitrust Act, Clayton Antitrust Act, they lifted all those. So now you don't have any. Here's a quaint thought. I mean, you, Sam, when I heard you play 16 tons, and what do you get? You must be old enough to remember when they had things like stationery stores, and they weren't all owned by Staples and Home Depot. Actually, people in the community had stationery stores, and you must be old enough to remember when there were pharmacies, and they weren't all owned by CVS and Rite Aid and Walgreens.
That's correct.
And I'm sure you're old enough to remember when there were hardware stores, and they weren't all owned by Home Depot and Lowe's. And I'm sure you're old enough to remember when they didn't allow interstate banking because they put the Glass-Steagall Act in place in the 1930s to stop the money changers from robbing the temple, the people in the temple, of all their money. And they've deregulated it all, and they've given everything to the bigs. So to me, the only way this nation turns around is to go back to where it was, a renaissance. Do you remember when they used to build quality?
Go to the
website, Decaying Detroit, and look at those gorgeous buildings when there was craftsmanship and quality in this country
that
are going into dust.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think the chances are? Now, this sounds real draconian, and the reason now I've mentioned this. First of all, I start talking about immigration, so it's like, oh, he's picking on Mexicans. It's like, the last time I checked, Mexican is a nationality, not a race. And I popped off a while ago, and I referred to George Washington, the old white guy. I say this because I want to bring awareness to the fact that if it comes right down to it, the ones who want to further their argument will always reach for something that will, in some subtle or overt way, attempt to divide us racially. So, I got one for you. The current administration has done nothing for African Americans living in poverty. Nothing. Where is a federal jobs program? Where is a mandate that it's like, okay, I get it if you're incapacitated, if you're disabled, you need the help. If I were incapacitated or disabled, I would be grateful for any help I could get. I get that. However, unless you are unable to work, these jobs that, quote unquote, Americans won't do, well, they were getting done before. Who did that? The fairy godmother? Don't think so. So how about this? All illegal aliens must return home now. And these people who are on welfare, you will go into a federal and a good jobs program. And you will begin earning your own way. And you will be happier. You will not be stuck in the cycle of poverty anymore. And these products will be made by well-trained American workers. So, how about that? How long would it take to get something like that going on? You go, okay, you can come over here as a guest worker and you can immigrate to this country and you can do it legally or stay where you are. And then we look after our own people first. We put them through jobs training, and then we send them to the places where we actually build stuff again. Why, Gerald, do we continue to do business and export our manufacturing business to communist China? That is my question. Why?
Why? Because it's a total sellout. That's why. Because the only thing they're interested in is the bottom line. And we went to China because it was cheap. And these hypocritical politicians talking about human rights. Hey, don't do any business with Cuba. Hey, but China's okay, you know.
Yeah, no cigars out of Cuba, China, but red Chinese are okay, but no cigars out of Cuba. Sorry, that's
exactly
illegal.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, John B., you left one other thing out by sending our jobs over there for manufacturing. We also sent our brains at pennies on the dollar, fractions of cents on the dollar. Do you think the Chinese, the Japanese, the Koreans, any of them would have the manufacturing and technological skills and know-how that we gave them for free? Look at the deal. Here's the deal. You want to build, you want to sell some planes? Yeah, we'll buy some airplanes from you, but we're going to manufacture them over here. Now, don't worry, you can make some of it over there, and we learn how to do it. They sold our jobs, they sold our minds, and the politicians sold the soul of this country. Again, I'm a political atheist. To me, it's a gang of 535. You want to call them the Republicans and the Democrats? To me, you could call them the Bananos or the Gambinos, you know, the Lanskys or the Dutch Schultzes. There's no difference. And I mean, when you look at the hypocrisy of these people, and, you know, but by the way, I say this from experience. I began my career at a graduate school as a young guy running political campaigns in Westchester County, richest county in the United States.
Yeah.
I went up to Albany. I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate. It's the worst job I ever had in my life. I only lasted one session and I left. All day long, it was watching grown men grovel. I'd be talking to my buddy in the back of the chambers, and all of a sudden, a senator would walk in and my friend would leave me. I'm a kid, I'm 23 years old. And he'd come back. I say, hey, man, he'd follow the senator and pull out his chair to help him sit down. I said, what's the matter? The cat can't sit down by himself? I mean, that's all it was all day long. And then I also designed and instructed American politics and campaign technology. I was so good at doing this stuff. I taught at St. John's University. And I spent several years in D.C. as a government affairs specialist. I used to kill environmental legislation for the chemical industry. You know, as a younger guy growing up and learning that money wasn't everything. And I began to change by my middle 30s. And so I know what it looks like. And as I said, I have, you know, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts is one of our subscribers. I'll tell you a quick story, one of my favorites. John Connolly.
Tell you what. I want your John Connolly story when we come back, because we've got to take a break, Gerald, okay? All right. TrendsResearch.com is his website, and his books are Trends 2000, How to Prepare for and Profit from the Changes of the 21st Century. Another one is Trend Tracking, and another one is What ZZ Gave Honey Boy, a true story about love, wisdom, and the soul of America. We'll be back with Gerald Celente and your calls when we return. This is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, want to hear the John Connolly story from Gerald Celente when we come back, and everybody who's on the line, please hold your position. I will get to I will get to all of you if you will hold there. Okay, all right. Tea kettle, it's whistling. Go get it and come right back. 2 minutes, and we will proceed here at Coast to Coast AM. All right, Gerald Celente, let's hear that John Connolly story, and then there's some people on the line that want to talk to you, so proceed, sir.
Okay, I'll make it really brief. It was 1992. He wanted to meet me in my book, Trend Tracking, that I wrote in the late 80s. I had mentioned it'd be a new third party. For some reason, I mentioned Ross Perot's name. Why, I don't know. So he wanted to meet me, and how did I figure that out? I have a photo of me, him, and his wife, Nellie, in front of the book depository. A matter of fact, I wrote about this story in one of the trends journals years ago. And we were in a limousine parked out in the front of it with the shot that you see of the book depository. That's a side. And he went on to explain what happened that day. And I heard a gunshot. I looked to my right, and he said, you know, I know it was a gunshot because I've been hunting since I'm a little boy. I looked over to my left, and there were brains on my shoulder. He said, I know there were brains because my daddy was a butcher. So that's the way this day began. So we're going back into the Anatole Hotel, and he said to me, we stopped. He said, I read your book. He said, it's a fine piece of work. He said, and your heart's in the right place. He said, well, you don't have a clue what's going on. And neither do the American people. Because if they did, there'd be a revolution in this country. Now, let's remember who John Connolly was. This was when he was shot, of course, and when he was with the car with Kennedy. He was governor of Texas.
Yeah.
He went on to become, and he was a Democrat, he went on to become the Treasury Secretary under Nixon. So it wasn't like this guy hadn't been around. And I'll never, of course, you never forget that. And that's what's happened. And that was in 1992. And you look at how this country has declined since then. And the robbery is right in front of our eyes. Who may, as I said earlier, bailing out banks. The gap between the rich and the poor in the United States is now the widest of any of the industrialized nations. And then every year there's a new war or more talks about war. So, you know, the country to me, the only way to get back to it is to get back to our roots and a renaissance in the terms of what the founding fathers believed in, why this country was founded. Not to say it was perfect, and I'm not you know, high in the sky. I mean, I know
nothing's perfect.
Slavery, and yeah, I mean, there was terrible things that happened, what we did to the American Indians, on and on, you know. But there were a lot of great things in this nation. So I'm saying let's bring back the great. And there's no reason why we're living the way we are. It's only because the will of, as I call them, the gang of 535.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, it's something else. You know, one of the groups that has been they've had such a hard time over the years, and they're such a hardy, resilient bunch, and that's the Irish. Just a little shout out to our Irish friends, because I know there's some listening. Do you know they practically, nobody, no group was ever more discriminated against than the Irish when they came to this country, talking about some of the wrongs that were done? You know, people try to make it into a racial deal. It's not. It's the old golden rule. Whoever has the gold makes the rules. That's the evil golden rule, you know? And they almost, I mean, practically single-handedly, as a group, built the first New York City subway system, and I mean they built this thing right. It's still there. It's still there. Naturally, it's underground because it's a subway, but the unbelievable architecture, and then the contributions to literature and music and everything else. It's talk about an underrated crew. We need to get some Irish people. Well, we're past St. Paddy's Day, so forget about it. Catch them next year maybe, or something like that. Get some emails and I'll read them. All right, I'll tell you what, let's take a call. Let's talk to Tony. Tony's in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Welcome, Tony. Thanks for holding so long.
No worries. I just like to agree with the fact that it's not really a democracy anymore. I live in Wisconsin, and, you know, not only does the government have its own agenda, but all the individuals in the government have their agenda as well. The political parties are so involved in fighting over who's in charge that they can't seem to get anything accomplished for the American people. Here in Wisconsin, when a certain party, and I won't name parties or names, lost the popular vote because they couldn't get their way any longer and force their ideas or their bills through, the representatives of that party all left the state and went into hiding because they knew the government would have to shut down and they wouldn't be able to pass any bills or make any votes or do anything because they were no longer there.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Thanks for the call, Tony. Appreciate you. I got a question for you, Jared, before we leave this. How will the Affordable Health Care Act, what's that going to do to us?
Well, you're hearing horror stories one after another. And it's just going to get worse. And again, here's the other trend. I was talking about, you know, the quaint old days when people used to own their own shops and, you know, own family farms and the pharmacies and drugstores and et cetera. The same thing is now happening to family practices. They're going. The big farmers, the big healthcare business, they're buying them up. The doctors are now becoming employees of these mega medical businesses, just like the guy that used to run his own hardware store works for got a job with Home Depot. That's what's going on now. Doctors' practices around the country are being bought up by big medical, and now they're becoming employees. So nobody knows how this Obamacare is going to play out, but everybody who watches it and is impartial about it knows it's not going to be a happy ending. It's going to make a bad situation much worse. And having said that, nothing is going to change in terms of healthcare. Oh, by the way, I also have an honorary doctorate in complementary medicine from the National University of Health Sciences. So I know a little bit about this field. Nothing is going to happen until the health of this nation improves. What a disgrace this country's become. We're the most obese people on the planet. We take more prescription drugs than any other country per capita. No one's even close to us. And the only way this is going to change, as I see it, is when the people change, when the individual changes. So you could have all the health care you want. Let's suppose we had the perfect system. It's not going to be worth anything as long as the people keep doing to themselves what they're doing. Crap goes in, crap comes out. And this is, look, who ever heard of childhood,
childhood obesity?
Not obesity, when you take insulin.
Diabetes.
Diabetes. There was no such thing when we were growing up, childhood diabetes. That's being caused because of obesity, not the other type of, the type 2 diabetes, different than the other type.
Yes.
So nothing is going to change because look what the people have become.
But you know, Gerald, it's so much deeper than that, even, because look what we're being fed. How much hydrogenated vegetable oil, high fructose corn syrup, genetically modified organisms, and all of that stuff, how much of that stuff can you eat? I understand that there's an extra protein in wheat now because of the GMO infusion. That's why when you eat bread, you put on weight. You want to lose weight? Let me tell you what to do. Don't eat any carbs after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Eat and stay off of the bread, and the weight will fall off of you. 99% of the people who want to lose a few pounds, quit eating bread. I know it's hard. Do it anyway. Tell you what, let's jump over to San Francisco, California. Brenda, way over, all the way west of the Rockies, all the way to the ocean. Come on the bridge and talk to us, and thanks for holding.
Yes, good evening, John. Thank you. It's great to be on. And Gerald, your guest, I love everything that he's saying. John, I have a question for you, or comment, and a question for Gerald. The comment that you made, John, about this country needs to get off our behinds and start putting our heads together and creating some economy, some opportunity, I think is absolutely wonderful and would definitely put us on the right track. And there are a lot of us and good people doing just that in great numbers, as big as we are. And also, I'd like to say, Gerald, what can we do, what we're not already doing, to prevent more of the sell-off of our public spaces and our buildings and the privatization of our public services and our parks? What can we do? And one more comment, what can we do to stop what Caltrans is doing up in Willits, destroying the ecosystem up there? And thank you very much, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you,
my lady. What do you got, Gerald?
Well, you know, at the last page of this current trends journal that just went out, I received a letter from a young guy, Dan Powell, 27 years old. And he's been following us for a number of years. And he said your message of, quote, things won't change until the individual changes, struck me in a way that changed many aspects of my life and motivated me to be the change I want to see in the world. I've gotten in great shape. I'm growing much of my own food, and I buy organic food whenever possible. I stopped eating out unless it's high-quality food that I'm purchasing. And he goes on and on. He's a nurse. He's an RN. And he said, what should excite you is that everyone around me has seen the changes I have made, and they are making the same changes. My girlfriend, her family, my family, many of my friends, they're all learning and changing every day. And that to me is, and then we go on to say, I sent Dan Powell's letter to a colleague. In response, cited a powerful passage from Balancing Heaven and Earth, an autobiography by the famous Jungian analyst Robert Johnson. Recollecting a meeting with Dr. Jung, Johnson described a long lecture. He said, people used to ask Dr. Jung, do you think we will make it? Will civilization survive? He invariably answered, if enough people will be conscious. This is our task, not only individually but collectively, to become more conscious. We cannot wait for heaven to save us. Each of us must be responsible for the birth and rebirth of the hero and savior within and realize the golden world through our acts in the earthly world. And to me, that sums it up.
That is pretty darn good. Hey, Mark is trucking in Kentucky. I hope he's still there on wild card line number 5. Are you there?
Oh, Mark. Yeah. Thank you very much, John and Gerald, for staying up with us, the late night workers. A few facts. I hope I can set up my question for Gerald. The underwear bomber, the Hut Tree Militia in Michigan, the Christmas tree bomber were all set up by FBI and operated by FBI. This Boston bomber has come out that they couldn't do this bomb by themselves without specialized training that the CIA, FBI, and State Department do on a regular basis. All the people in Boston were so scared that they ran into their homes. They're afraid of the United States government officers that are incompetent as to rights and liberty, or they're liars and thieves and pirates enjoying the raping and pillaging of Americans. And every government, the mayors of every city and every town, especially Boston at this particular time, and all the police chiefs, not one of them ever thought to do what do they call it when a child is missing? They have a call out form.
With a dawn alert or something like that? Or the when you missing child alert, yeah.
Yeah, it's the Amber Alert.
Amber Alert.
Now, for a whole night, everyone in Boston's got a gun to their head. They lift the surge, and a regular guy finds this guy in his boat. An Amber Alert would have done the same thing. These government agencies will not allow the people to participate in their own freedom. Instead, they point guns at them and order them into their houses like prisoners and slaves.
Oh, I couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable to see these guys banging on the door. You can see the door distorting as they bang on it. It looked like these guys were sitting around their boxer shorts or some watching TV. They have to come out of the house with their hands over their heads, and one guy's almost to the sidewalk. He tries to take his hands down, and another soldier screams at him. And I just got an email from a guy, Stephen, I'm going to have to pick on you a little bit. He writes, you have continued to further convince me that the more we hear from you and your far right-wing, repetitive and negative conservative libertarian weekly guest, that you would not know nor recognize the truth if it smacked you between the eyes. Imagine, Americans stayed put for a few hours, and they got the guy. How downright civil rights revoking. Well, here's the flip side of that coin, pal. Right here from Joseph Farah, entire communities of hapless and helpless citizens forcibly evacuated. Other citizens advised to stay in their homes and cowered in fear. Some citizens were so paralyzed by fear and defenseless they hid in their closets. Police conducted illegal warrantless searches and seizures and held homeowners at gunpoint. What would be wrong to walking out to the boat and going, I am holding a 12-gauge shotgun. One twitch and you're in hell. I will aim low and take out your knees. Get out of the boat. I mean, how hard would this be? It's not. There's nothing like the racking of a pump shotgun to just plumb take the wind out of somebody's sails. Or is that just archaic and Neanderthal? I don't think so.
Something else, John B. And
thanks,
that
Mark.
That everything I've stayed on this thing from the beginning and wrote everything coming out for the mainstream press that I possibly could. People were saying, I wish I had a gun. I wish I had a gun.
Well, it's better to have one and not need it than to need it and not have it, you know?
Yeah, and this is like from the New York Times. You know, this is from that newspaper quoting people. They wish they had guns. No, no, don't worry. We'll take care of you. Get in your house. Don't move. Come out with your hands up, whatever they want to do, because you can't protect yourself. What has this country become? And you look what's going on with this whole Bush thing with the library and all these comments being made by Karl Rove and others that Bush and the country, we've been protected. They protected us. They're not protecting us. A guy like Karl Rove couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag. Protect us.
I'll tell you what, Gerald, we're coming up here on a break here in about a minute, but would you mind sticking around for another segment? I won't keep you for the whole hour, but I want to make sure that the people who have held to talk to you can do that, if that's okay.
I would love to. Thank you.
Excellent. Gerald Celente is our guest tonight. Why don't you check out his website? It's trendsresearch.com. And just lay back into this tune. Be mellow. There is light at the end of the tunnel. We'll get there. This is Coast to Coast AM.